The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
When you think of movies and entertainment, you think of Los Angeles. When you think of Los Angeles, you think of one of the most expansive and valuable real estate regions in the world. One of the most expert and active of the many players in the Los Angeles market is business attorney Andrew Smerzler with the law firm Venable LLP. Mr. Smerzler has an extensive practice in the entertainment real estate business where he focuses on the acquisition, distribution, leasing, and financing of office buildings, retail centers, movie studios and theaters, mixed-use developments, amusement parks, restaurants, and so on. He was very recently involved in the landmark Warner Brothers leasing of two Frank Gehry office buildings in Burbank, California, the terms of which he helped negotiate. I will place a call to Andrew Smerzler in just a moment as he has agreed to discuss the business of entertainment real estate. We will talk about the Warner Brothers deal to whatever extent he can do so, and the business of entertainment and real estate more broadly in so-called Tinseltown. We will call his office now and get this interview underway in earnest. Is that you, Andy?
Yep. Okay. I can hear you.
All right. Sorry about that. For some reason,
that's okay.
For some reason, my speaker wouldn't go on. At any rate, okay. Well, let's start with let's talk about that landmark Warner Brothers. Or leases. I'm not sure. There are a couple different buildings, Frank Gehry buildings. So was that one lease? Was it two leases?
And, well,
what side did you represent? Because you negotiated or at least helped negotiate these leases in Burbank.
So it's more than just the leases. The overall deal, and to take a step back, so my partner, Mitch Eval, and I represented Warner Brothers. And a deal that Warner Brothers and the developer, a guy named Jeffrey Wirth, who is through his partner Stockbridge Capital, they were negotiating it before the lawyers got involved for a couple of years, and we got involved starting in 2015. So this is a deal that we have been involved for over 4 years, and it just got announced in April. So the basic outline of the deal is that Warner Brothers has, since 1923, has owned and operated what's called the Warner Brothers Studios, which is in Burbank. It's just south of the 134 freeway. And across the freeway since the early 1950s was something originally called the NBC Studios, which, if you recall, Johnny Carson used to say, "I'm broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank." Well, he was broadcasting from what was then called the NBC Studios. NBC sold it, or GE, as the owner of NBC, sold it in the early 2000s to a joint venture owned by Jeff Wirth and Stockbridge, and they've owned and operated ever since. And the deal is essentially as follows, is that that site, the NBC Studios, which is since NBC has left, has been called the Burbank Studios, is about 35 acres on the north side of the 134 freeway, west of north of the Warner Brothers main lot and west of the Disney Studios. On the portion of that studio lot, the south portion, the portion closest to the freeway, the developer is going to build for Warner Brothers two office buildings, one in about 350,000 square feet, and the other one in about 450,000 square feet, to be designed by Frank Gehry, which is among the exciting parts of this is the fact that Gehry and his firm is involved, which will be leased for a long term to Warner Brothers, for up to 75 years. Those buildings are expected to come online, be built and come online in the next few years. Concurrently with that, the balance of the Burbank Studios, which is really the north and two-thirds, three-quarters of that property, Warner Brothers is going to buy that from the Wirth Stockbridge joint venture in a deal that's going to close in 2023. As part of that, Warner Brothers is going to sell sell to Worth and Stockbridge three office buildings located, currently owned by Warner Brothers, that are located in Burbank, three smaller office buildings, and also sell to them an auxiliary studio production lot called The Ranch, also in Burbank. So it's really, in addition to the leases, there's a transfer of five separate large properties that that's going to happen in the next few years. The idea being sort of Warner Brothers' idea behind it is to consolidate a lot of their workforce in these new buildings, moving them from other locations in the LA area and those three buildings, office buildings that are being sold to these new, these brand new buildings, to also sort of, you know, move production, and there's a demand for production space, to get more production space at the balance of the Burbank studios, and to do it in a location that's convenient to them. It's just across the freeway from the main lot, and what's part also what's part of that is that Warner Brothers got the right to, at some time in some point in the future, and subject to obtaining a bunch of approvals from governmental agencies, because to build a bridge over the freeway, so to connect the two lots, a pedestrian slash golf cart bridge, not a bridge for autos. So it's part of, and the overall, as you know, there's a number of reasons why Warner is doing this, but another is, and it coincides nicely with the fact that, again, in 2023, it's going to be the 100th anniversary of Warner Brothers in Burbank. So it's sort of what's being called their second century project. So it's pretty exciting. And it, like I said, it was a long time in making, and it took a lot of twists and turns. It's pretty complicated, but it's a very, very exciting deal.
Yeah, you know, it made a lot of headlines. Congratulations on that. And the terms of the leases are what? How many years are they in for?
It's and this is all public. They go as long as up to 75 years.
Wow.
So the idea is that even though they don't lease the property, even though they don't own the property, they're going to be there for a long time. And this is going to be part of sort of the Warner Brothers fabric, and it's going to be part of the Warner Brothers identity, hopefully for many years to come. And the fact that, you know, they are going to be architecturally significant, that even makes it more exciting.
So Warner Brothers is about as big a name in Hollywood as you get. They're a client of yours in the firms, and you no doubt have a lot of other name brand clients, and I know attorneys can't speak very specifically about who their clients are. If you can name some of your clients, all the better, but if not, can you characterize some of the interests that you represent with regard to real estate, entertainment companies that, or even individual, well, I suppose you wouldn't mention individual, but with regard to some of the real estate business you conduct?
As you say, I can't really talk about specific clients. I mean, suffice to say, I've been practicing. It's going to be 30 years in the falls, and I've been doing. I started as a corporate lawyer for my first 4 years, and when I moved from my original firm to second firm, I had learned to become a real estate lawyer, and it was a firm that had a decent sized practice in the entertainment industry. So I got sort of involved in that, and over the years, have represented, and we've represented both here and in our prior firm. Again, my partner Mitch and I, Warner Brothers for many years, but related entities over the years. We've represented other studios. I've represented several movie theater chains. Represented both owners of office buildings that sort of cater to businesses in the entertainment industry, as well as other companies and businesses that are involved in the entertainment industry that relate to, again, things like law firms, business management firms, trailer and entertainment marketing companies. I've represented probably the largest one in Hollywood in a sale a few years ago. Movie theater companies. I've done amusement park sales. So it's a real, you know, it's been a varied set of experiences, both, you know, buying and selling and financing and leasing. It's really all over the country, but because I'm in LA and because this is sort of the hometown business, a lot of things that touch the entertainment industry in some way or another over the years. And it's, you know, luckily it's been pretty active lately, besides the Warner deal.
You know, another big project in Los Angeles is the massive new Los Angeles Rams and Los Angeles Chargers Stadium and the surrounding mixed-use development that's being constructed to the tune of $3 billion, supposed to be activated in the year 2020. Do you happen to have any involvement in that project, whether a small piece or a big piece?
I'm not involved in that. Obviously, it's a fascinating project for lots of reasons. I'm not involved in it. Other than as a resident of LA, I find it really interesting to see, you know, the commitment to, you know, to football, to development, which, you know, that's not that surprising, but it's really interesting to see how it plays out really for the city of Inglewood, because it's such a massive influx of development and money in that area, and sort of see how the city benefits from that really sort of interests me. And then the other piece, which is sort of overarching, on how you, with all sort of new development and in LA, not just entertainment, but in LA, is how does it fit in with mass transit, and how is that going to work? I know, you know, as I sit here in Century City, I look out my window and I see they're digging a hole for the subway, which I think, you know, it's going to happen because of the Olympics, if no other reason. There's the money is there and the will is there to get it done in time for the 28 Olympics. But they're going to, you know, they're building, you know, light rail, you know, past the stadium as well, I believe, on the Crenshaw line. And to see how that really affects the city and whether the city benefits from that. I have no doubt, sort of given I know who the people and the entities that are involved in that, for, you know, the NFL is going to do fine and the developers are going to do fine. It's sort of interesting to me how the surrounding areas are going to do. But, you know, that is sort of a game changer. And, you know, the other one, which I think is up in the air, is what's going to happen. You know, the Clippers want to move to Inglewood as well, move out of Staples Center. And I know that's still very much up in the air, but you've got, you know, the Clippers, who definitely have, you know, Steve Ballmer owns the Clippers, so you have a guy with a lot of money and a lot of, you know, if he wants to, political ability to hopefully, you know, to get something done. And so you're going to see a very changed area, in that city the next 5 to 10 years. So I'm curious, again, more as a resident than as someone who's involved in those deals, and how that's going to work.
And I should say that rumors are, according to Stephen A. Smith and some other people, that the Clippers may be getting signing Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard for the 2020 basketball season. We'll see. Having a new stadium and a guy with billions of dollars in his pocket like Steve Ballmer, I guess anything is possible. So,
as one of the few long-term Clipper fans in the world, I'd be very excited about that. Although, you know, tempered for that, we'll see. they have a way of sort of stepping on the rake, right, over the years. The other thing is I think even if Ballmer gets to go ahead to build Inglewood, that's, you know, to get from point A to, you know, a completed project is going to be years away. Who knows? Even if they get, you know, KD and Kawhi Leonard, the question whether they'll still be playing or not, I think that's definitely an open question. But yeah, no, it's for once, it's exciting times to be a Clipper fan.
Yes, exactly. So let's talk about some of the other, never minding whether they're your clients or not, what are some of the other big entertainment projects that are under development or going through the approval process right now in Los Angeles?
Well, it's an interesting time, and in LA for real estate, especially that touches the entertainment industry, because of factors are sort of buffeting the industry. And so, you know, you have these legacy interests in studios that have been here like Warner 100 years and Fox close to 100 years and Paramount and Disney and Universal have been here as well before I started practicing, and they're still here, and they're still, except for Fox's case, having been bought by Disney, you know, still out there, chugging away. What's changed over the last few years is now you have these big tech companies coming down, really mostly from up Northern California. So, you know, you have Netflix, you have Amazon, you have Google, and what they're doing is that they're moving into L.A., or in the process of moving into L.A., or they are moving into L.A. in a major way. And so that is reflected or in a number of projects that are sort of ongoing. You know, Culver City is a place that that you is seeing tremendous growth. You know, there's the Ivy Station project, which is right by, right next to the Culver City metro stop. Google is just signed a lease in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so to take over most of the Westside Pavilion, the old shopping center on Pico and Westwood in West LA. You have the Culver Studios renovation that, you know, and Amazon's going to take most of that. And these are big investments, some owned, mostly leased by these big companies that threaten to swamp it. And then you have Netflix, who is leasing up a lot of space in Hollywood. You know, there's the Academy on Vine that they just did a deal and signed a lease for. There are a few others, and you know, their appetite for space, not just Netflix, but, you know, Amazon and Google as well, is pretty voracious. And so what that means is a couple of things, one of which is that it's putting pressure on these sort of older, you know, the studios, the more established studios. And what it's, you know, and from a real estate standpoint, from a short-term basis, it's been great for investors and great for developers. You know, we'll see about the long-term effect of it. I think it's interesting. It's very interesting to me that you have HBO and Amazon going to Culver City and right by Metro and Light Rail, you have the Westside Pavilion property, which Google's going into, is a half mile walk from a Metro stop. And you're going to see that, and I know that, you know, the Netflix and Hollywood's right near the Red Line. You can see as those companies moved, I think mass transit and is a big factor in what they're doing. Just, you know, access to transit, because I think the reality of moving around LA, it just gets harder every year, and younger people, I think, are much more willing than you know, earlier generations to give up the car and to travel by light rail, by bike, and other means. And so that's affecting where these developments are going. That's affecting you know, how things are being built.
You know, you mentioned one of the really interesting projects that you just mentioned, and help me out again. Google is moving into which facility is it?
Google is moving into what used to be the Westside Pavilion.
Yeah, Westside.
Which I guess is still technically Westside Pavilion. Yeah.
A perfect example there of one of those malls. I mean, malls are dying all over the country. Here,
right.
The developer, I forget, is, I think it's Hughes is the developer. And with the idea in mind of turning into office space and then leasing it out to multiple tenants, and then Google comes along and says, we'll take the whole place.
Right, and you know, Westside Pavilion a little bit unique in the sense that it's a mile away, or actually a couple miles away from Century City, the Century City Mall, and you have Westfield through $1 billion at the Century City Mall, and then lured away Nordstrom to be its, you know, to make its anchor you know, location outside of Seattle, and so, you know, they left Westside Pavilion, and Macy's sort of, Westside Pavilion sort of had its lunch, you know, eaten by a bigger, more nimble competitor that was just, you know, just up the block. But, you know, you do have that, you know, that issue nationwide of these malls, yet less so a little bit in the areas I'm talking about. And remember, the other thing we're talking about is that, you know, L.A. is Southern California is massive. When we're talking about these deals are all, you know, they seem far away because it takes forever to drive anywhere. But, to, you know, physically, they're not that spread out. I mean, we're talking about, you know, if you think about it, it's far east and north as Disney, which is a little past, a little further north and east past of Warner Brothers, to the west side, through Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Culver City, Westwood. You know, there's some in Santa Monica, some really more smaller locations. There's obviously no big studios there. To Venice, to a little bit in the South Bay, but it's a relatively small swath of Southern California that we're talking about, that is sort of on this intense development. That's sort of where the history of Hollywood has been for 100 years, and that really hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm. You make a great point, because I used to live in Pasadena, and I would drive to Mid-Wilshire to the office building I worked in there, which was across from the Ambassador Hotel. Mileage-wise, I forget what the miles was. It was only about 12 miles, but it took me 45 minutes to an hour to cover 12 miles of pavement, of asphalt. So it's kind of
well, that, right.
But I mean,
that's right, and it's only getting worse, and so that's going to be one of the big challenges. Is how do you still make this work? And the other flip side of that is how do you get? Is LA ultimately going to turn into San Francisco in the sense that it's already difficult to find affordable housing in LA? I mean, it's not as difficult as it is in San Francisco, but is it, because of the way it's continued to grow and develop, is it going to be impossible for people to afford to live here unless you're a millionaire or a multimillionaire? And that's one of the big challenges that all California has to figure out. I mean, it's more acute in San Francisco, but you know, LA is a challenge because it's one thing if you're a high paid exec, you'll be able to find something within presumably a reasonable distance of where you work. But if you're someone who's not at one of these companies, who's not that highly compensated, it becomes more challenging to find housing and to get to and from the office.
Yeah, Palmdale's a long drive, so.
But, exactly.
I should have probably led off with this question, but let's talk about what encompasses entertainment real estate, because some of it's obvious if you're talking about movie studios or you're talking about movie theaters or restaurants or theme parks, but what is your definition of entertainment real estate?
In one sense, I don't really have a definition because I'm a lawyer, so if a client comes to me and it's ethical and they can pay the bill, I'm going to do the work, whether it's representing them building a ball bearing factory or a wristwatch company. So in some sense, I don't know if it's that meaningful. I sort of view it. It's a little distinct in that you have a couple of different sort of, I guess, nodes or different types. I mean, yeah, you have representation of the studios, which is sort of unique in the sense that they own large pieces, not as large as they once were, but, large pieces of property, and they have their own needs. A lot of those sort of day-to-day things, they all have their studio facilities groups that sort of handle a lot of that stuff. And so most times we wouldn't get involved unless there were sort of bigger deals, like a buying or selling or financing of something like that. So that's one area is they're representing studios in with respect to their physical grounds. The other thing is that all these studios, because they're they're all part of much larger organizations, they have real estate needs that that go beyond just their physical lot. I mean, they all are big office space users. You know, one example being Fox and Fox Tower. That's been there for all the diehard fans out there, you know, forever. It's not technically on the lots right next to the lot, but I know, you know, Warner Brothers over the years has leased a tremendous amount of office space all over L.A. because they're just users. The other sort of piece is, yeah, it's just sort of the traditional office use for those affiliated or sort of servicing the entertainment industry. So, again, it's law firms, accounting firms, business management firms, talent management firms, production, post-production facilities, trailer, you know, entertainment marketing facilities, the movie trailer companies. And those, it's a lot of it is straight sort of office work. It's buying, selling office buildings or leasing office buildings or leasing office space. Sometimes it's leasing sort of the smaller studio facilities or warehouse space for, you know, production or post-production work. So that's another part that most people don't see, and that's a big part of sort of the backbone of, you know, of LA. It's always been part of the backbone. It's the industries and the people that sort of service the people, you know, behind, you know, who are a few steps behind the behind the people that are behind the camera, but sort of you can't make it run without it. And so you see a lot of, you know, I'm looking out at Beverly Hills right now, and that's just full, you know, number of office buildings filled with people who touch that you know, who touch the entertainment industry that way. The other things, I don't disagree that things like movie theaters and theme parks and stadiums our entertainment, in a sense. I can tell you that they're sort of each one's different from experience. You know, their needs, their issues are slightly different. It's more, you know, I sort of always sort of view those as, you know, they're either retail business or, you know, like a theme restaurant or a theme park or a movie theater. Is a retail business that happens to be where the product some touches the entertainment industry. And so, for example, movie theaters, I mean, the product is entertainment, but for the people that run them, they're really retail and real estate businesses. And, you know, that is, you know, movie theaters are sort of unique. It's a unique business anyway, and a very difficult business because you're... It's a business where you got to spend a ton of money. Your capital needs are huge to build these things or acquire them. And then you got two big problems, or three big problems now. One is, you know, the two of them, which you always had. One is that it's a retail business. We don't control your own product. You're sort of at the mercy of the quality and the willingness of the studios, the distributors of films to distribute films that people want to see on terms that you can afford. The other thing is historically you've always had been the risk of technological change you know, the bigger and better. I think most people have the experience of, you know, going to a movie theater and then, you know, 5 years later, you know, and it's state of the art. And then 5 years later, something bigger and brighter and newer opens up down the block. And you know, the old theater is sort of becomes, I wouldn't say obsolete, but it just becomes a harder sell, and that's really difficult for the movie theater owners. And the third thing is, and that's always been the case, or it's been the case as long as I've been involved in this sort of stuff. The more difficult, you know, the newer thing is, you know, people have been asking this for years, but you know, people are still going to go to the movies. And yeah, you have your Avengers, and you have your your summer blockbusters, but sometimes those theaters are difficult to fill, and you know, well, they're impossible to fill, like on a Tuesday in January. And as technology changes, it becomes even more difficult. So that's a unique business. Yes, it's the entertainment business, but it's sort of unique. Theme parks, you know, they're more, I sort of view them as more hospitality. It's, you know, akin to hotels in a lot of ways, entertainment, even though they are sort of dependent in most cases on, you know, intellectual property that's owned by an entertainment company. And sports stadiums are unique. I mean, it's such, you know, they're obviously very expensive, very hard to build, and, you know, very disruptive to the neighborhood, to the city that they're located in. you can go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, and then confusing the issue are there, you've got technology companies that don't think of themselves as entertainment companies, and
right.
yet what they're doing yeah. is computer-generated imagery or virtual reality. I know that Cinemark is the next step for Cinemark, the movie theater chain, is bringing a version of virtual reality into the theaters, which, again, as you were talking about, Andy, the constant need to keep up or to go one better to keep people from saying, I could just sit in my living room and watch the movie. Well, you could, but, you know, we're going to give you some extra here.
Yeah, no, it's difficult, and that's a particularly difficult business to be in, and you know, you can see that. I think, like I said, most of us had the experience where, you know, a movie theater becomes obsolete, you know, or can become obsolete fairly quickly, and I can tell you that movie theater companies, you know, often there are easier businesses out there, put it that way. You know, it's one thing if you have a sports franchise and you're the only game in town, and you know, people are generally going to go and spend money. Movie theaters is like I said, it's historically been a tough business. That hasn't gotten easier.
Let's just introduce a little bit of history to this. Why did the entertainment industry end up in Los Angeles to begin with? Because there's a lot of big markets in the United States, but L.A., it landed there, and L.A. has dominated it from the start right up to current day. Why?
I mean, this goes back, you know, years. I mean, some of it's legend, and I don't know how much of it's ultimately true. I mean, what I sort of always heard was sort of a function of sort of three different main reasons why it ended up here at the beginning of the 20th century. I mean, one is the weather, although it's raining right now, which is sort of weird for May. You know, it's the weather's going to be good. You know, the entertainment industry started in New York, most of it, and obviously, you know, the weather generally out here is better than it is in New York, all things being equal. Back in the early part of the 20th century, the land was cheap. There was a lot of it, comparatively. And the third thing that is that I've always heard, I don't know how true it is, but sort of a truism, is that back then, California was very anti-union. And you had, you know, New York not as much, and it was just cheaper. You know, these guys, you know, they were guys. They were able to, you know, basically come out here, sort of free themselves up, get cheap land, and it was very economical. And you didn't have to worry about if you're filming something outdoors, it was going to get rained out. So that, you know, that was always the sort of the story of why I ended up out here. And you know, the no union thing hasn't been the case for a long time, but the land isn't cheap anymore. But the weather's still good, and you know, it put down roots. That being said, you know, LA has challenges in the sense that with that is that, as I think most people know by now, so many things were filmed or taped in places other than Los Angeles or Southern California, because of financial incentives. So, for example, in Canada, there's big financial incentives to film up there. And certain other states, I know, you know, other states have been trying to develop their studio businesses. Georgia, Louisiana, you know, New York still does that. So yeah, there are challenges, but it's still, you know, the roots are put down here, and for, you know, as long as LA's exist, or almost as long as LA's existed, it's sort of been, you know, it's the company business. It's been a company town in that sense.
What do you think the short-term and long-term future of entertainment real estate in L.A. is? I mean, you see what's happening today. You've been seeing this for a few decades now. So what's your estimation as to how L.A. is going to – how is it currently performing? It sounds like very well. And how do you expect it to perform down the – say, in the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, short term, it's like you said, Mike, it's doing well. I mean, you have this, especially for investors, you have this increased demand that we mentioned before from I would say, I used to call them tech companies. I don't know if you actually call them that anymore. But the Amazons, the Googles, and Netflixes. And so, you know, they're coming down here in a major way, making big investments here. And they're competing. I mean, that was, from what I've read, that was one of the impetuses for Fox being sold to Disney the fact is that, you know, the specter of competition from the Amazons of the world made it, it just, you know, I guess Murdoch felt that he, you know, in order to compete, he had to merge. So right now it's good. You know, the overall economy has been good for a number of years. California economy has been good for a number of years. That being said, look, the weather's always going to be good here, I think, unless climate change changes things. But, you know, long term, there are some question marks. You know, I guess the first thing is, well, how's the competition going to shake out? You know, will these massive entities, whether it be, you know, one or more of the Amazon, Google, Netflix, or whether it be, you know, Disney or someone like that, swallow everyone up? All the competition up. How's that gonna work? And I think that's an open question. And then I think it's just sort of the issue is just sort of, and we touched on them a little bit earlier. You know, what's life going to be like in Southern California in 20, 30 years? I mean, in climate change, how's that going to affect things? But you also have, like, as I mentioned, you know, affordability, you know, and tied into that is sort of high taxation. And, you know, are people going to be able to afford to live in a place? You know, these companies, they need employees. And it's not one of the things that, I mean, yeah, you can write from your, you know, from anywhere remotely. You can do certain things remotely. A lot of these things, you need to be there. Is it because it's become so expensive that a lot of the back office gets moved to other places? You know, you obviously have seen some of that already. Is it a function of they can't keep good workers? You know, the San Franciscoization of this, where you can't afford to have sort of the middle class here that makes up the backbone of this, because you can't afford to live here. That's a real issue, and I know that's an issue all over California that needs to be dealt with. So that's one of the questions, and the third question sort of tied with that, which is a little bit unique to LA, but not completely, is just getting around. You know, will mass transit be built out? Will LA go vertical comparatively? You know, this has been a horizontal city for most of its history, and that started to change. It'll be interesting to see whether you know, LA is going to be able to sort of effectively make, you know, create this world or enable this world where people don't have to get in the car to get to work, or if they don't choose, you know, so choose. That, I think, you know, LA has done a good job of building over the mass transit over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. But and there's obviously, as I said before, there's lots of projects that are ongoing, that are in the pipeline, that are funded, that are actually under construction. But you know, that's a hard thing to do. I mean, look at New York, right? They spent how many years trying to build the Second Avenue subway, and they finally got like a mile and a half open. It cost them like $1 billion a mile. You know, hopefully LA could do a little more efficiently than that. But I think that's going to be important to you know, where it goes from here.
One more question, Andy, and that has to do with our magazines, our real estate investors there, whether institutional or private, private wealth, part of the private wealth space. What about real estate investors interested in committing investment capital to entertainment real estate in Los Angeles? Now, institutional investors, clearly, you know, they're probably involved in a lot of these projects without even knowing it. But when it comes to high net worth or ultra high net worth individuals and families, is there any kind of clear path for them to participate? Have you seen some of that money. I mean, I think of Roy Disney and Shamrock.
Shamrock, right.
I mean, the fortune came from entertainment and maybe continues to play in that arena. Is there a way for any kind of clear path for the high net worth individual to participate?
Well, I mean, there are paths. I mean, you know, you can invest in one of these companies, but obviously those aren't really real estate plays. You know, you can buy shares of Google, it's only, very subsidiary way, a real estate play. And you can, buy shares of AT&T that owns Time Warner, or not Time Warner, Warner Media. But again, that's not a real estate play. The way high net worth individuals have historically done it in LA is, there's a couple of ways. One is, investing through private equity that invests in some of these things, or on an individual basis, you do see on a comparatively smaller scale. You may not be putting together the group that buys out, CBS Television, Center, but there are a lot of office buildings, some new, some old, some development of varying sizes. That I know because they're represented in both, the investors and the sellers and tenants in doing that. What you're really doing at that point is you're not so much betting on entertainment per se. You're really betting on LA, and you're betting on the location. It's one thing, to buy in middle of, Wilshire Boulevard and Beverly Hills, where it's always going to be Wilshire Boulevard, or one thing to buy, in Santa Monica, where you're close to the beach, it's always going to be close to the beach. It's another thing to buy, in areas that sort of are probably more volatile. You go out to the Valley, you go out to maybe, it's probably changing, but Culver City, you go to certain areas, like in Glendale, which are good areas, but they're probably, they don't have that sort of that cachet. And so you can definitely, for high net worth individuals, you can participate in that way. And people have. I mean, LA, it's always sort of interesting to me. Second biggest city in the country, one of the wealthiest, the highest concentrations of mega wealth in the country, maybe, obviously eclipsed by San Francisco these days, but a pretty wealthy city, with a history of big companies you know their names of, and you always ask the question, how many Fortune 500 companies are headquartered in LA? And the answer is none. LA, despite the fact that you know these names, the Warner name, the Fox name, the names of, various other, Beverly Hills, it's a mid-market town. And it's a mid-market town on sort of the corporate level, and it's a mid-market town in a lot of in the real estate. So you hear about these massive developments. You hear about, I'm talking about the Warner Brothers deal. The stories about these studio lots, and a lot of it's because it's very prominent, historically prominent, because the entertainment industry does a very good job of promoting itself. But the backbone of LA and has been, and probably continues will be, is the sort of smaller mid-sized companies. So it's the, you're in Beverly Hills, or you're in Brentwood, you're in Culver City, you're in Santa Monica, you have an inventory of buildings, some of office buildings, some new, some going back 50 years, which aren't, maybe you look at them, they're in a Class A location, but they're not Class A buildings. Those are owned, by families. Those are a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them still owned by families or groups, where, our family offices, where you can put together a group and buy a building. They're not cheap, but there's still ways to play in that area. And so there are opportunities to do that.
Los Angeles business attorney Andrew Smersler has been our guest. He is with the law firm of Venable LLP. Andy, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
No problem, Mike. It was great speaking with you.